Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Tanya the Communication Doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hello, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have the lovely Kate Griffiths, who is known as Kate's Colour because she's a colour therapist, a colour teacher, and an amazing mindfulness coach. Hello, welcome, Kate.
Hi, Tanya. It's really great to be here.
It's lovely to have you. I just want you, just before we start moving forward, just to explain to my audience a little bit about what you do, because it is interesting, because you do use colour, you do use mindfulness, you do use lots, you've got various kind of spiritual, holistic tools that you use to help kind of help people overcome trauma. But how would you explain it in your words?
So I think what it's about, Tanya, is that people come and see you, be it you or me, if they feel some sort of connection with you. And my job as a coach is to help people feel safe so that they're able to really share how they feel about things. And so often what we find is when I find when people approach me initially, they'll share what's easy to say, so what we call the presenting issue. But then when they come for a session, they start to open up. And what colour does is help me to see what sits beyond the surface. So it enables us to go really deep and to look at the subconscious patterns, which sometimes the individual themselves isn't even aware of. And then once they gain that awareness, then they have that opportunity to make a different choice and to integrate what they've learned through working with me in a session so that they actually find that they make a shift. Another way of looking at that, this, I would say, is that, you know, we all have feelings, and feelings are good because they help us to make sense of the world. But sometimes we block how we feel because we've been told at some point in our life it's not appropriate to feel that way, or we repress it, or we have unexpressed feelings within our energy body. And if those are left there, then we can actually start to feel really ill on the physical level. And so it's really about helping people to shift that. Could be, for example, somebody who's really, really anxious. But if we maintain that state of anxiety, quite often what I've seen is people end up with sort of stomach issues, perhaps, where it may just be irritable bowel syndrome that can then become diverticulitis, that sort of thing. So it's really about helping people to step into their whole selves, which means accepting all of who they are without judgment, which is why in some ways I guess I called my company Whole Self Leadership.
No, that's so interesting. It's also interesting when you talk about that unexpressed feelings, because it is interesting. We do tend to hold our feelings inside of ourselves as human beings. And I suppose rather than experience them, it's easy to suppress them. But leading on to what I was saying earlier, I would like to ask you, using colour, how you would describe yourself using colour, just to give my audience a little bit of an idea.
Okay, so on my website, there is a free colour quiz, which is based on the three primary colours, which are red, blue and yellow. And anyone can do that quiz just to get a feel for how colour is. And what I've found when people have done that is they've got, oh yeah, that's really exciting. You know, I can really resonate with what it's saying about that. So for me, I'm very yellow. And yellow people tend to have quite a strong masculine, but they're also really interested in learning and interested in knowledge and all of those sorts of things, and can quite often, a bit like as in systems thinking, if you've ever looked at spiral dynamics, the yellow meme is all about being able to hold lots of different perspectives. So that can get quite confusing, because you can see what your position in something is, but you can also see the other person's. Mm. So, you know, how do you manage that process? Does that help?
No, that's really interesting. But now you've told me about yellow, I'd like to know about blue and red.
Oh, no,
the other two. Yeah. Now I'm thinking, well, what's blue and what's red? With regards to the three colours.
Well, what I'm going to say to you, I think the best way to describe it is to actually, you know, to do the quiz, I suppose, because that'll give people a sense of what those different things mean. I guess I can really resonate with yellow because that's what I am. So it's only a taster. It's kind of a way in. It's not nobody is one colour. In fact, why I like colour therapy as a tool is because it allows greater complexity. Mm. It allows, you know, because people are a range of different things. We're not one thing, you know. That's why I've always sort of struggled with, you know, astrology, if you like. You know, just because you're born at a certain time of year, does that mean you look like this or you're a particular thing? And that's why I love colour, because it's when somebody comes for a session, yes, there is what I would call their colour blueprint DNA, which shows maybe what some of the underlying patterns are. But you can be exploring an issue with somebody and I can say to them, right, well, would you like to, it's a bit like constellation work, you know, would you like to pick a bottle that represents that individual and a bottle that represents you? And then that tells us a lot about what the underlying dynamics are. Mm. And so it can change. And, you know, there are 87 bottles in the system and about 45 essences, which are spritzers. So there's a lot of choice that people can make.
That's interesting. That's really interesting if you think about it in terms of how that, like you say, how colour affects us. And look, it's just a different way of looking at things, I suppose, in terms of, like you say, you mentioned astrology, and I suppose you've got psychometric testing as well. But yeah, what led you, because obviously to look into colour and look at people in this way, mm-hmm, it must have been a journey to get to there. So what attracted you to do this type of work?
Well, I have a strong belief that we are called to the work that we're here to do. Mm. So many years ago, and I honestly couldn't tell you how many, but it was probably about the time I became a coach. So I've been a coach for nearly 12 years. I read up some stuff about colour, and I thought, gosh, that's really interesting. And I went to a one-day, if you like, fair or sort of event where it was all about colour, and I did find it interesting. But at the time, I was working at PwC, I was a consultant there, and it was just a bit too out there. Mm. Right, and I was like, I'm not sure this is for me, so I kind of left it, even yes, though I'd really enjoyed it. Mm. And then probably 6 or so years ago now, you know, probably more like 7 years ago, I came across colour again because of somebody I was working with at the time who was a colour therapist themselves. And so I ended up quite by chance, and I think this sometimes happens, in about this time of year, ending up going to a day that was all on colour, where this person that I knew ran the day. Mm. And it was my first experience of colour mirrors, which is the system I'm trained in.
Yeah.
And I think what was really fascinating about it, Tanya, was I went in with a series of issues like we all have. Mm-hmm. I came out, I still had the same issues, but I felt lighter and I felt more resourced and more able to, you know, deal with what I had to deal with. And I was like totally intrigued by this. I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense in a logical way, but there's something in this and I want to find out more. And I got really, really curious. And I was like, right, now I'm going to. Yeah, when I got asked, did I want to train in it? It seemed like a no-brainer because I was like, there's something in this that I can't make sense of, but it definitely, there's a power here that could be really helpful.
God, that's so important. But I just want to dive a little bit deeper because you said before going into that work, there was a series of issues. And I suppose here on Real Stories, I do like to see that journey because I think it's so important for other people to identify with or to see that somebody's come out of a particular situation. So would you like to share with us an example of that kind of one of those series of issues that you experienced that led you into that change and how that change happened for you?
Yeah, no, very happy to do that. So because I believe, like you're saying, really, that life is a journey. And I had some really challenging stuff. I had a very, very difficult relationship with one of my parents when I was growing up, to the extent that I vowed I would never, ever live at home again. Mm-hmm. And I left home at 18 and I never did live at home again. And I, you know, when I met my husband, I mean, he's a great man, love him to bits and all of that. But what I really admired about him was how confident he was. Yes. And because I'd been knocked so much myself, I didn't have a lot of confidence in those days. Mm-hmm. And I naively believed, Tanya, this will make you laugh, that if I married my husband, maybe his confidence would rub off on me. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, obviously, over time that it wasn't going to be like that. So I guess for me, it was, you know, I mean, it sounds a bit, it's hard to put it in a sort of, but it is about being okay with being yourself. And interestingly, if we fast forward to now, I've just had a set of mala beads made for me by a wonderful woman.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, that's a meditation tool.
Yeah.
And she makes up a mantra based on the stones that she's used to put them together.
Oh,
and the mantra that she's come up with for me is love yourself just as you are, or I love myself just as I am. And I think, yeah, that is in essence what life is about for all of us. But, you know, some people get to that much quicker than other people. And for some of us, it takes a longer time to get to that place. And I guess, you know, taking it back to colour, why I like colour is that with so many other tools, like even mindfulness and CBT and stuff like that, they're still very head-based.
Mm.
So it's about a mental approach to this, and actually I think we need to go deeper, and it's about helping people to reconnect to who they are, really remembering, so it's almost like remember who you are, and actually to become in touch with your intuition, and that opens up a whole kind of spiritual dimension. So I would say, you know, I've been on that spiritual journey over the last 16 years, and it's, you know, it's like anything, it's a gradual process. You learn one thing and you work with that, and so it goes on.
Mm. No, that's so interesting. There's a lot there, and as I was just listening to you talk about your experience and that finding that love and having your, you know, having your mala beads done for you, I think that's beautiful. So I've got some mala beads off and they're absolutely lovely and great, obviously, you know, for meditation. But what came to my mind was I was thinking of Dwayne Dyer, because I think I was introduced to his work probably about 20 years ago. Yeah. And he does a talk on the I am, that kind of the affirmation, I am this, or, you know, yes. I am beautiful, I am, you know, those, that sort of a journey. But it's so important, just the power of the I am and the power of stepping into that and maybe looking into the mirror and say it to yourself, because I suppose the first time you may say to yourself, I am beautiful, you may look in the mirror and you're saying it, but you don't quite believe it. But I suppose after a series of time, or probably working with someone,
you then start to see your beauty, or then you start to kind of get your confidence and tend to love yourself. But even that's a journey, isn't it? It's an ongoing journey, because if you've been pushed the whole time, or if you've been abused, or if you've experienced trauma and people have told you that you're not attractive, or people have told you need to look a certain way, and I suppose society tells us every day that we need to be a certain way. That's and it. It's so important to go against that, or to find yourself and to know yourself, to kind of just cope with society. And it just also makes me think about young people, because now I work a lot with young people, and I know you do as well, with whole self leadership. And it's so important, isn't it, just to allow someone from a young age to have that experience, they learn to love themselves. What is your experience? What's your feeling on that? What, I mean, because I know you do some work with young people as well. What's your feeling on that?
So I think you, a bit like me, you've mentioned lots of different really interesting points there. So what I would pick up on, and I expect you would possibly agree with this, but if I look at the way I parent compared to the way my parents parented back in the, you know, the 70s, it's completely different.
Mm.
So I was brought up, and I don't think this is uncommon, but, you know, I had one quite Victorian parent. So it's almost like, you know, children are to be seen and not heard.
Yes.
On a level. Whereas the way I parent is, I kind of see my children as young adults. Yes, mm. there's things they need to learn, and we need to model for them and support them in that journey into adulthood. But actually, I see them as my teachers as much as anything, that, you know, they've chosen, spiritually, I believe they have chosen me and my husband to be their parents, and they have things for us to learn. And so it's much more of a reciprocal dynamic, if that makes sense.
No, totally. Yeah. It's an exchange, isn't it? That's how I see it as well with my children, that you know, if I suppose from a Buddhist perspective, you can believe that sometimes, maybe I always think with my daughter that she was my mother in a former life anyway. I always think that she's wiser than me. Yeah, I think she's wiser than me. But also, it's when you have that attitude, when you open yourself up and you actually see the knowledge in your children, and you see that it's an exchange, I think that's a way for us to grow as human beings, isn't it? That's totally my belief.
And I think it's just small things, you know. So I don't have any problem with apologizing to my children when I've made a mistake.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
And I do that often, because I see mistake as a mistake.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. And actually, as human beings, we were designed almost, not designed, I mean, you know, I'm not saying there's somebody up there sort of pulling the puppet strings, but that we're meant to make mistakes, because that helps us to get back into relationship with oneness, the one, the divine source energy, the universe, whatever, however you and your audience define it. But that's what it's all about. And to go back to the other point and the other thread in your conversation, whether it's with, you know, working with young people or you know, adults, it's actually for me, you know, what's helped me to come to this place and to be in a much more centered space than I was, you know, 20 years ago, and, you know, as I grew, is having that connection with the divine and actually have it as a living relationship. So I think you talked about that you do meditation every morning.
Yeah.
And I do a spiritual practice every day. That's how I start my day. And the days when I don't do it, because I'm also human, I notice that I haven't done it.
Yeah.
And it's like there's something a bit off. Because if you like, Tanya, I think the biggest debt we ever have, regardless of whether we owe money or, you know, and this is, you know, thinking about what we were talking about before the call with this uncertainty that we're in at the minute, you know, the biggest debt we have is to the divine, because, you know, I believe every person has an aspect of the divine within them.
Yes.
We come from the source energy, but we are created into this physical form by the divine. So therefore, that's the biggest, you know, that's the biggest debt we'll ever have. And we can never repay that. But all we are asked is to be in connection with it. And that's when the magic and the miracles can happen.
That's beautiful. That's so true. I do believe the same as well in terms of, I love the way that you've put it. You've just used different words that I would use in terms of using that. Because some people, if they're religious, they may speak about God. If they're Christians, or you know, everybody's going to see it in a very different way, or your higher self, or divine, that divine energy. But it's the same thing, really, no matter where you're coming from, in terms of actually not being afraid of death, I suppose, because we're only, the body is just physically here. And it's an exchange that we're doing with people in the world and everyone around us. But actually, I don't believe we ever die also, you know, because after losing my parents as well, I still believe that they're around me, you know, their soul energy, they're still around me. So I don't really believe you ever really die. I suppose when you've got that attitude and you look at life in that way, you see things in a totally different way. And that sometimes in a way can take away the fear, because sometimes people are in this world and they think about, okay, I'm here, I've got to achieve this. And then their whole life sometimes becomes a competition, and then not looking at the people around them as the human, as humans first, you know? And that whole idea of looking at people in that way, I think it's quite life-changing as well. And it's interesting to hear what you do with the colour and how you kind of put that together. And just talking to you here, Kate, I'm actually feeling very relaxed in your energy, actually. We're just having a conversation, and when someone's on that energy or that vibration, and you're really, you know, you do feel differently, don't you? Do you have that experience sometimes when you're in a different, because when you're quite a sensitive person, you could talk to somebody and it's not even so much a conversation, but it's just the energy that actually relaxes you.
That's it. And so I think you really hit on something there, Tanya. The reason we do this work, apart from, you know, wanting to be in a deeper connection with ourselves and with Source, so that we can then have that really deep connection with others. So I believe that it's exactly that, that people are attracted to. That's why there's no competition. You and I, in some ways, do very similar work.
Yeah.
But people that want to come to me probably wouldn't go to you, and vice versa, because people are attracted by the energy of the individual. And actually what they're looking for is a safe space and to be in that place of rest. And also to go back to what you were saying in your previous, you know, commentary is around how things change over time. And you know, how some people, I think you said that some people are in a rush to kind of achieve and prove because they believe it, they're only here for, you know, 70 years, 80 years, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with you on that point as well, that, you know, I've still got both my parents, but all my grandparents are long gone, that you can get guidance from your ancestors. You can be in communication with them. And actually, you know, death is just the beginning of something else. We just don't really properly understand what that is. So there is no need to fear, because either we're going to come back or we're going back into Source energy. So it's the start of a new part of our journey. It is kind of how I would see it. And I think when we can rest in that, then we're not rushing. And I think one of the things that I've learned over time, if you like, which has come through all the different, you know, meld of all the spiritual practices I've followed, is my thing, if you know transactional analysis, one of the drivers in that is the hurry up driver. Yeah. Always thinking in a rush, got to get things done. And that was me until, you know, fairly recently, actually, you know, whereas now I'm much more relaxed about it. You know, it may not happen in the way that I think it's going to happen, but it's also about building really solid foundation and taking the next step and the next step. I mentor a lot of business owners, and they're like, why, you know, why isn't my business successful? And I think, well, your business is a bit like a, when being a baby, you know, babies don't walk straight away. They have to learn how to crawl, and then they have to build up their muscles. You know, often they might get to a small coffee table to help pull themselves up so that they can get to standing. And then eventually, after some more time and more effort, they can walk. And it's the same with a business.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. So it's so interesting, and it's business like everything else, as we described earlier, it's energy, isn't it? Everything is energy. Mm. And sometimes it depends on like you say, if the business is not doing well or something's not happening, because it could be their energy and stuff that they're going through as well, because you drive your business, don't you? You drive that energy, and whatever energy you bring is what kind of comes forward or comes to you. It's a bit like the law of attraction, really. Whatever you put out, you get back, and you manifest if you want to. What do you think of the law of attraction? Do you believe in that?
Well, that's a really good question. And if you'd asked me that probably a year ago, I'd have probably said, oh, yeah, no, I'm up for that. I was always a bit skeptical, but
yeah,
I did used to probably believe in it a lot more. And I think that the distinction for me now is I've been, you know, gone deeper into the spiritual piece. And so I don't actually agree with it in that. I believe as humans, we are all needy, right? You know, so obviously as business owners, we want to have customers and clients and people coming to us, you know, and that neediness is normal, but often we try and hide it, particularly if you're at the start of your business and perhaps you haven't got many clients or, you know, things are going slow. And but people can sense that, you know, it's like an off smell. It's all energetic, and then it drives people away. The way I would describe it is a bit like, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but if you've had a friend, I remember years ago having a friend who didn't have a partner, and we were all, you know, partnered up, and they were desperate to find someone. They'd be like, well, do you know any single men?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not coming around. Who's going to be there? And I was like, oh my God, you know, it was so exhausting. Being around them, and it was really sapping of my energy, but not just mine, but anybody's. Mm. And so you kind of distance yourself from them. Yeah. And that's kind of what it's like with somebody who's like struggling in business, you know what I mean? Because they're like desperate to get a client. Are you going to be my client? Well, actually, what we find is if we're relaxed, it's like, yeah, well, you know, you might have a really good conversation, nothing happens. And then 3 months later, that person comes up to you and says, you know what, I'm now in a different head place. Yeah. Space, and I'd really like to work with you, because you haven't forced them to sign up today, this minute, right now. It's like, but how we can get to that place is because it's not a logical thing. That's where I think, going back to your thing about the law of attraction, I believe it's about being in relationship with source energy, with, for me, what I call the divine, because then actually, you know, I am not the every action. Yes, I'm responsible for my business and the actions that I take, but it's almost like being the vice regent of your business. I'm doing that on behalf of the divine, and the divine moves through me, so I can have faith and trust, because it's not down to me and the limited perspectives that I have, you know, because there's something bigger than me, and it's all coming through that connection. Does that make sense?
Oh gosh, no, it makes total sense. I mean, I see it in exactly the same way, but I suppose I do believe in the law of attraction. I've just looked in it a little bit, as I look at it a little bit deeper in terms of, I remember reading something about from Frank Alper talking about the law of opposites, having the law of opposites before you have the law of attraction. And then when I understood that it was something you have to feel, because a lot of people will do affirmations and then they read about the law of attraction after reading The Secret. They think they know think about it, but they don't understand it in terms of actually not feeling it. It's like worthiness. If you're not worthy, you don't feel worthy, and you have this idea of something, you're not going to get it because you don't feel worthy internally. So I believe it's an internal thing. It's actually believing that you can do something, or believing that you are worthy of whatever you want, to actually achieve it. And I think part of that is a journey, like you said, with regards to divine, in terms of trusting the universe and trusting that you've put out what you've done. I mean, I've been there as well with business, where I've been pushing the past. I've definitely been there. And then I realized when I stopped, or when you kind of step back, oh, you know, people are actually coming. People do mean when they say, oh, I just need some time, or I like what you've done. But you know what, it's a journey, isn't it? Especially in journey business, in terms of marketing, in terms of
Oh, yes.
spiritual journey, isn't it? Yeah, spiritual journey.
I agree with that. I mean, if you sit on your meditation cushion all day and hope
nothing will happen, yeah.
I used to do. You've got mine and Buckley's, frankly, because it's a combination. So I think it is about, you know, saying to the divine, yeah, I'm up for this, and making the effort. So, you know, how did I meet you? I met you through LinkedIn, and through a decision that I took to get more involved. And I will forever be grateful to Stephanie Barnes, who I know you also know, because
yes, that's how we connected, isn't it?
Mutual friend of Mark, mine and Stephanie's, introduced me to Stephanie. I put a post on LinkedIn, my first one in ages, and she then actually tagged a few people she knew, like Gary Turner and other people, and suddenly this post was trending in leadership because lots of people were like, oh, who's this Kate Griffiths, you know. It was me, really. It was, you know, circumstance.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's that thing of like, well, if you know, and I think it's about seeing what you're seeing what you're marketing as a gift, you know, that other people need those gifts. So we need to be able to talk about it so people can find us.
Totally. You know,
something really interesting there. I'd like to explore it a bit more and go into that deeper place. And I suppose that's where I, you know, that's kind of for me what it's about, is really giving people the opportunity to go quite deep so they can really start to heal some of those patterns that maybe they've had forever and they just think is a part of who they are, you know.
No, it's interesting. No, it isn't. It is about that healing of that patterns as well, isn't it, really, and letting go. And I just think this is such a strong podcast already, Kate, because there are a lot of people, as I said earlier, and I think as you said in the same way, that are in competition with each other and with regards to the marketing and everything else in business. But when you let go of that and when you've done the work, it does come back. I do believe it comes back. And I suppose that's why I mentioned the law of attraction. But I suppose people see it in many different ways. It may not use that term, but the idea of putting something out there and then trusting that you're going to get something back. It's about trust, isn't it? So I've done my work.
No, I don't disagree. I totally agree with all of that, Tanya. I wouldn't disagree with that. I think that the nuance, if you like, is that, and it's really subtle, and I may not be able to explain this in a really clear way, but I'll give it a go, is I think what I've really begun to appreciate over the last year is that it's who we are in relationship to the divine. You know, so if we're sort of really pushing, look at me, aren't I amazing? Where's the humility in that? Because, you know, we are who we are in relation to that source energy, not just apart from it going, right, I'm going to create this and I'm going to create that. You know, when you think about how many people have applied the concepts of the law of attraction and got nothing. Yeah. Now, you could say, as you said earlier, that it's because there's a part of them that doesn't believe it. But I also think it's because it's this subtle thing about we are, you know, we need to be in relationship to the divine. It's that connection to the divine as well as to ourselves. So it's not just about doing the inner work on our own. You see what I mean?
Oh, gosh, no, totally, totally.
And I think that's what brings about the shift. And it's a really, as you say, mix of things, because as business people, we need to keep going out there, you know, meeting new people, talking to them, communicating, doing podcasts, doing other things, you know, activities that mean people can see who we are. And also just being present. So, as you know, we're in very unprecedented times right now. Mm. And that's what we're being called for. Leadership for me is that, you know, is about being in that centered space, even though we don't know how this is going to end, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We can do that if we're not on our own, which we aren't. We're never alone. We always have that connection. It's just whether we choose to see it or not.
Mm. No, that's so true. That's true. You are never alone. And once you understand that, I think it helps a lot, especially when we're in this place now of not knowing what the future, what we can't control. In some ways, with the whole coronavirus and everything that's going on right now in the world, What's interesting, it is about, it's that, because as human beings, we're probably so used to controlling ourselves or controlling what we're doing, controlling everything on some level. And with this, you have to let go of control.
Yeah.
And I think to some people, it's a real test because, you know, for some people, that's just really hard. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what's happening tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen the day after. I can't plan. The planners are like probably, you know, pulling their hair out. You know, I can't plan my holiday for this. I'm going to lose money. I'm going to do this. But when you kind of let go of control in some way, you can receive or you can see things in a deeper or meaningful way. And I think that's something to learn from all some of the light to learn in this situation that we're in right now.
Yeah. That's really well put. I totally agree. I mean, when I used to have a business, as you know, with somebody else, and we went into organisations and took colour into organisations and wrote a book and all of that good stuff called Colourful Boardrooms. And one of the business principles that we devised, which relates to yellow, interestingly enough, in colour terms, is allow space for all the voices in the system to be heard. And we can do that when we realise we control absolutely nothing in this world. But that's a very hard thing to grasp for many people, because that's counterintuitive to the way that we're brought up. If you think, even, you know, why do we, you and I, do the work that we do in schools? We do that work because we want to change. Effectively, we'd like to revolutionise the whole system. So, but it's step by step through evolution of saying, no, it's not about stuffing our kids full of knowledge so they can spew data and facts. Because if you think about it, in 20 years' time, think about where AI will be. We will never be able to compete with a robot in terms of memory and facts.
Yeah.
But actually, one thing as human beings that we have that they do not have is compassion and empathy. And those are the sorts of things we need to be teaching our young people. And that's kind of at the heart of the work that I do with young people in schools.
That's so beautiful and beautifully put as well. And I totally agree with you. And I think that's top of my list. The top of my list in terms of life, in terms of how you live your life. I mean, relationships, building trust, and finding that inner compassion with yourself and with others, and having empathy when you lead. I think if a lot more people had that attitude, we'd be living in a very different world to we are now. But it's got to have faith, really, that I think a lot of people now are becoming a little bit more conscious, a little bit more aware of it, because of technology in some ways. I think you could go one way or the other and go left, or you can go right. And you can get so kind of intoxicated with the whole, this whole feeling of, I suppose we're forced now with this whole feeling of not being able to communicate in the way that human beings communicate, not being able to talk to each other. Not some people are choosing not to talk, or some younger people, the younger generation, as I see it now, sometimes when I go to restaurants, I notice there's no communication, or a lot of the communication is done via WhatsApp. And it's just losing that whole sense of, you know, sitting there and really connecting with someone, looking at someone's eyes when you talk to them, you know. And actually the whole feeling of the energy. I mean, today we've had a conversation over Zoom. We're on Zoom or on Skype or on... That is the future now, isn't it? People are not...
Well, it's interesting you say that, because the things I was thinking about, because, you know, you've probably seen it yourself, all these people going, oh, I'm going to teach you how to... make your offerings virtual, and, you know, so there's all these calls and different you know, packages being developed, and I think, well, that's great, but actually I'm slightly fearful about that, in that, you know, if you think about it, even if we had a you know, when we had the video on, we could only see our faces and probably up to just above the heart. So you're missing a whole part. If you think about the energy body, there's the 7 chakra points from the pelvis all the way up to the top of the head, and you're only getting about 3 of those energy points in that connection. So it's not a full connection. So whilst I'm absolutely in awe of people being creative and seeing new possibilities in these uncertain times that we live in. We need to be careful about what it is that we're actually creating. Because, you know, going back to what we were talking about just now about the schools, I mean, I think there's as much work there with teachers. You know, they work so hard, and you know this, having been in that place yourself many years ago. It's exhausting. It's almost like being on a hamster wheel.
Yes, exactly.
Of you, and, you know, not just, and actually the whole system is sort of falling apart at the seams, you know, so, you know, it's that CAMHS is oversubscribed, so now teachers are expected to deal with mental health issues in schools, but they don't have the training for that, you know, and they're still supposed to be offering their particular subject and whatever else. And so you sort of see them absolutely almost stretched to breaking point. And the impact of that means that it's much harder then to have those deep connections with students and each other and build relationships. Because it's and the next thing and the next thing. So I was recently at a trust conference doing a couple of workshops for teachers, and I was really taken aback about, you know, one of the questions we had. This gives you an example. We're in this situation and we were showing them how we contract with the young people, and one of the questions we would ask at the beginning of a session, one of three, is what do you need from yourself? So what I mean by that is, you know, how are you going to show up? What qualities do you want to be sharing or embodying to make sure this is a really great session? And they didn't understand, most of them didn't understand that question because they didn't have a concept of self. And I found that shocking.
You know, I think that's really interesting because being a teacher or being on that, you know, being in that career, I can totally identify with that because I sometimes when you are a teacher, as a natural human being, as a person, it is about, it's kind of about looking after everybody else and making sure everybody else is fine. And sometimes you can exclude yourself, and then the idea of self-care from a perspective of, you know, just looking after yourself from an emotional standpoint is almost alien to you as a teacher or to many people, many teachers, or maybe in other professions, but I can only talk from that because I've experienced it. But yeah, no, it is fascinating because I mean, from leaving that, I went through the burnout myself, but I didn't even realise that I'd gone through it until I look back, because at the time I was too busy being resilient and getting on with everything, you know. I thought, I've got to get this working, I can't stop. You know, and the minute you stop or you take time out, then you think, oh my God. And I started reading about the burnout, reading about mental health, reading about all these things that, you know, your body could emotionally experience. It was, for me, eye-opening. So it's so interesting how you say that, because you have to kind of, I suppose, meet people where they are, because some people just cannot see that because their priority is looking after everybody else. And then their last priority is themselves. And I suppose that's what's got to change, because it's that whole thing, what Louise Hay says, you know, because you can heal your life, you know, you need to look after yourself, you need to charge your battery, look after yourself first, before you then have the energy to really help another person. So that's quite deep.
No, I absolutely agree with you. So, you know, you say about, you know, what's the deeper story for each individual that comes onto your, you know, to your podcast. And, you know, as I probably mentioned to you when we first met about a year ago, I ended a business with somebody else. You know, it was a mutually agreed thing, not for any, you know, because we'd fallen out, far from it, but because of personal circumstances that were going on at the time. And I remember going through a huge amount of grief, because not only was I losing income, I was also, you know, in a sense, I was losing my best friend, you know, somebody I spoke to every week, and I wasn't able to speak to them then. And so I went through a whole process where, you know, I felt very low, you know, and all of those things. And when I, you know, it's like, no, right, I'm now getting to a place where I'm ready to start again. And I found a community, a marketing community, and I got involved with them. And the first thing I did wasn't marketing. The first thing I did, Tanya, was nourish myself, get Beautiful. Into my spiritual practice, because that's what I needed. I was so thirsty for that.
Yeah.
Because all of that had gone in my despair and pain. You know, I forgot about it all, you know? And that's the thing. And I suppose that's where I, you know, if I had a wish for everyone, it's like, it doesn't matter what you call it or what you do. There are many, many ways to build that relationship. But if we have that, it's like having a solid foundation, and we can weather any storm, any uncertainty, because it's not down just to us anymore.
You know what? I think that's beautiful, Kate. And I'm going to bring it to a close now, but I think that's such a lovely way to end the show, in terms of just kind of allowing people the space to kind of think of themselves and to nourish themselves, like you did. It's interesting, when you went through what you went through, you realised that you needed to nourish yourself and look after yourself, because it's so important. And I feel that a lot of my listeners can learn from that, in terms of putting yourself first, you know, but in a positive way. It's not selfish to do so. It is important to nourish your energy, just like it is, you know, to keep hydrated and drink lots of water. So so that's lovely. Thank you so much, Kate. Really, thank you. And from the Communication Doctor, and Kate Griffiths, adios.
Takeaways from this show is: what colour does is allow you to see what sits beyond the surface. I thought that was a really powerful statement, and powerful in terms of the power of colour and the power of unravelling those layers to get to the heart of the personality. Kate also talked about how we kind of hold all of this energy within us, and I suppose colour is how we express things to everybody. What I also found interesting is when Kate took some time out after being burnt out from the business and separating from her business partner, the first thing she decided to do was nourish herself and nourish her development as a, you know, spiritual being. And I thought that was really profound. Thanks for listening.